Hi, Dan.
Hey, Jason.
How's it going?
It's going pretty well. It's nice out here.
We're sitting on a balcony.
Yeah, I know. This is definitely the most interesting place we've ever recorded this podcast.
Certainly. I think we've all, haven't we almost always just recorded it on Skype?
Yeah, I think we've done it once or twice live.
Like at my house.
In your house, yeah. That seems logical.
All right, well, we're sitting on a balcony because we went to a podcasting festival in Orange County, Southern California, and we are sitting on the balcony of my hotel room, and we, as promised, before I go internationally traveling and you go internationally traveling,
indeed,
we're doing one last secret podcast before that all happens.
Yeah, and this is exciting. It's a nice way to right before our hiatus, it's a nice way to pause by enjoying this lovely scenery.
And reflect. Well, I mean, sitting out here in L.A., it's like warm.
Yeah, I was going to tell you how many degrees it is, but my watch has gone into power reserve mode.
Oh, no. Well, it's like 73 degrees
or
something.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. There's palm trees. You could almost see Disneyland.
Yeah. So, big week.
Big week, indeed. You went to an Apple event.
I did. It happened.
In Town Hall. For sure this time. Shh. The last Town Hall event.
Well, that's what they say. I don't know. I mean, maybe.
So this was this seemed like an interesting event because we'd all, been expecting new Macs, and Apple certainly delivered on that front, but there weren't all of the new Macs that people wanted or hoped for. And there were a couple other sort of little random things thrown in there as well. So what was your overall impression of this event?
It's a little weird. I feel like Apple has gone so long without shipping new Macs that there was so much pent-up expectation that it was never going to be fulfilled, especially since we knew going in, really, that some of the processors, like for a new Mac Pro, the timing was wrong. So they were either going to release old Mac Pro processors as their first new Mac Pro update in years, or they were going to need to wait another 6 months, which that's my feeling, is that they weren't going to refresh the entire iMac or the entire Mac line in one event. It was going to take a couple events. But the fact is, it's Apple's own fault for letting that line get so stagnant that people are frustrated about it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So, they focused on the laptops. This was a laptop thing, and the MacBook already got refreshed in the spring. So it was about the MacBook Pro. And it surprisingly included a laptop that is sort of the replacement for the MacBook Air eventually, other than the fact that the
13 inch Air, let's specify, I feel like.
So the 13 inch Air still around, and the 11 inch Air only now going to be sold to education, but Apple needs to keep those in the price list because they're cheap. And these are much more expensive computers. Right.
Their entry level for a MacBook, any sort of MacBook, is $1,399,
Is it for
the 13 inch?
For the little MacBook.
The MacBook, the 12 inch. Is it $1,299 or $3,99?
Maybe it's $1,299.
It might be that $1,299 point, which they've often said.
It's way up from
$899. It's above $1,000.
Right?
Yeah, well above $1,000.
Really, your entry level is $999 for the old 13 inch Air.
Right.
But that new 13 inch MacBook Pro, the low end one, is an ounce heavier than the 13-inch Air, and it's got the Retina screen, but it's a lot more expensive.
Right, right. It's hard to trade directly from an Air to that, I feel like, just in terms of it's a better computer, but it's not in performance-wise, but not necessarily in terms of all the reasons people might have bought an Air in the past.
Right. I mean, it is thin and light and has all that going for it if you've got a 13-inch Air. As somebody coming from the 11-inch Air,
it's a little bit
breathtaking how much bigger and heavier it is.
Agreed.
But I'm a weirdo with an 11-inch Air, and most people aren't those people.
I gather
if you want the lightness, you get
the 12-inch MacBook, right?
Like that's kind of
what we're being told, is the 11-inch Air being gone, the 12-inch MacBook is kind of the de facto replacement for that. But it's certainly a lot more expensive, as you point out. And
Retina is not cheap.
It's going to cost you some features too, right? Because you've only got one port. That one's only a USB-C, right?
Right. So
not Thunderbolt 3.
The new MacBook Pros are Thunderbolt 3, which means they've got the same shape port as the USB-C. And there's some confusion about this, and that's good because it's confusing. And so there should be confusion about it. But the ports are shaped the same. Thunderbolt 3 ports can behave like USB-C ports or like Thunderbolt 3 ports.
So you can just plug either one. You got a USB device, USB-C device, or a Thunderbolt 3 device. You plug it in, it just knows.
Right. But if you buy a Thunderbolt 3 dock and try to attach it to a MacBook,
not gonna go well.
It will fail. Yeah, because that's it's only USB-C.
And presumably the main benefit there is for things that really require high-speed data, like a like a hard drive
Most
or something.
Most low-speed peripherals are not going to be made as Thunderbolt 3, right, because why would
it's
you do that?
Extra expense for nothing.
Thunderbolt 3 emulates USB-C just fine.
Right, you plug in a Thunderbolt 3, like a microphone.
Or a flash drive, let's say, right?
Yeah,
it's
sure.
They're not going to make those Thunderbolt 3. There's not going to be a point. It'll be for like docks and high-speed storage and, you know, 5K monitors and things like that. Speaking of which... That was another interesting little wrinkle, was that Apple is basically out of the monitor business. They made a partnership with LG to make a 5K 27-inch external display with docking stuff and a bunch of ports and a webcam. And it's basically the Retina Thunderbolt display of old, except it's not from Apple. It's just from LG. And they work with them and put in some integration with the systems. So that's an interesting thing where they're like, we're not going to be in this business. LG's happy to make this for us. Let's do that.
Well, that's sort of a tried and true Apple methodology of saying, like, you know, let's not do this. Let's focus back in on what we do best. Let's not get distracted sort of by that peripheral game. And obviously, the Thunderbolt monitor got officially discontinued earlier this year, I believe. And it hadn't been updated in many, many years.
Many years.
So, you know, it kind of makes sense that they're getting out of that game, at least for now. I mean, nothing says they can't come back later if they change their mind.
They told Neil A. Patel at The Verge that they're out of the business.
Sure.
Because instead they can, you know, work with a monitor maker to make a nice, pretty monitor.
And think about it. The options for that are pretty limited, right? Because, you know, they do make desktop computers and certainly external displays. But I imagine most people buying MacBooks, any sort of MacBook or an iMac, most people are not buying external displays for that.
And my understanding is that the panel that's being used in that LG monitor is the panel used in the 5K iMac. It's basically the same. It's a P3 color.
So it was mainly there. You know, the Thunderbolt monitor was mainly there to appeal to either Mac Mini users, probably not because they're mostly on budgets, or mainly Mac Pro people.
Right. So I think that's what's going to happen is it's out there now with a MacBook Pro. The MacBook Pro can drive it. The MacBook Pro 15, maybe 13, 15 can drive two of them. Yeah, the 15 can drive two of them. And when there's a Mac Pro, and I saw some people say, oh, you know, are they ever going to do a Mac Pro, Mac Mini? Are they going to get rid of them? I don't think they're going to get rid of them. I think they're going to update them next year. And I think they messed up by not doing an update more recently. But I think they'll do one, and you'll be able to plug it right in to that display, and it'll work.
The Mini's a survivor. I feel like it's got a niche product. It's it's not terribly expensive to make. And it serves a purpose.
Yeah, it's got some people who buy it, and it's not a high priority for them. And I think the Mac Pro is not a high priority either. But I think it's a higher priority than people would assume. I think I sense a lot of despair from people who are like, "Oh God, Apple just doesn't care about us, and they're never gonna update my systems again." And it's because it's been so long, and that is, I think, Apple's fault, or it's Intel's fault, or it's some joint combination of those things. But I think Apple does care about the Mac Pro and will update it. I think it just has gone on longer than they expected.
And I think some of the frustration also comes from Apple, of course, being intensely secretive. And it would have been nice in some ways to get thrown a bone and just saying, like, pro customers, we haven't forgot about you.
Because
they've done that before.
I keep predicting on Upgrade in our drafts. I keep one of predicting, like, a head fake about this. A gesture, the high sign, like just something that says,
like, it's coming, like, relax.
We are going to do updates to the other, you know, look for our updates to other Mac models early next year or something like that.
Yeah, sure.
Apple.
They've done that before, though. It has happened. It's not frequent. I figured maybe under Tim Cook, maybe more likely, but you never know.
But no.
All right, let's talk about the elephant in the room, which is the Touch Bar.
Touch Bar.
What do you think? You actually got a chance to use it.
I did. A couple times. It's good. It's an input device. That's the thing that struck me when I talked to Apple people about it, is they refer to it as an input device. And, you know, the first time I saw it, the first moment I saw it, what struck me about it is that the virtual keys on it looked very much like the actual keys. Like, it was kind of trying to match them. That the keys, the brightness is, you can't adjust the brightness of that screen. It's auto adjusts based on the room conditions and I think the system conditions. And the idea there is, when you're just showing keycaps, it really wants you to not look down and think that you're looking at a screen. It wants you to look down and think that you're looking at some keys or a control surface of some kind.
Right,
so
they
repeatedly refer to it as an input device, and that's how Apple's approaching it. It's not a screen per se. It's an input device. And I think it's clever. I think the ergonomics of it are something we have to ask about. I've heard a lot of people say, why would I not just want a touch screen, which Apple's really opposed because Apple believes that the vertical surface is not something people want to touch. They want to touch the horizontal control surface, and that's what defines a computer, and that if you want to have a single screen that you can touch, you should get an iPad instead. That's their philosophy, and it's arguable, I think.
I think
what they believe.
The thing that frustrates me about that is I think it's a convenient philosophy, because it's, you know, obviously they make a touchscreen product, and that product they are now selling with the keyboard, which makes it a vertical surface.
And
so
it's convenient for Microsoft because, yeah, it's a vertical surface, but it's primarily not, right?
You're right.
The OS is designed for touch on one and not for touch on the other. But Microsoft, because they don't have a successful mobile strategy, essentially, in terms of, you know, tablets and phones, Microsoft approaches it from their level of convenience, which is all we really have are PCs, so let's make our PCs more, you know, touch-oriented.
Sure.
And so it shows the failings and successes of both companies
absolutely.
In having these their philosophies, but they're kind of convenient philosophies.
There was a point where I would have argued very much in favor that, like, you know, yeah, you're never gonna want to use a touchscreen on a laptop. You know, there's context switching happening in your brain, all that. It's frustrating. But honestly, I believe that we are so familiar with touch interfaces these days that I don't think it's that big an impediment. And I think, you know, and Apple may not want to do that, and that's fine. And I think they, like you said, they got their philosophy. That's totally cool. I think that it probably wouldn't be a huge deal if they made a touch sensitive MacBook. I mean, it may not be high priority. It may not happen ever, but I wouldn't feel crazy if they turned around next year and were like, yeah, we decided there's a reason, like, we can rationalize doing it.
First time I used the touch bar, I used it and then immediately reached up to touch the screen and realized that I couldn't do that, which is weird. But that said,
and I've done that switching back and forth between my Mac and a touch device.
Yeah, that said, reaching out, somebody was complaining on the internet, as they do, that, like, the Photoshop demo, wouldn't that have been better if she had just been able to touch the screen and do all those things? And I thought, all right, so I'm sitting at my laptop, and now I'm reaching out, and I'm pushing my hands all over my laptop screen. It's like, that doesn't sound very appealing to me, but it does apparently sound appealing to some people. Apple, and here's the thing. I do think that Apple tests stuff like this.
Sure.
And I think Apple believes that that's not a good use case, and that while people are excited about it, you know, I think Apple looks at this. People were saying also another criticism that I think is valid of the touch bar is that because you can't navigate it by touch, you have to look down, at which point you're breaking your context anyway.
Yep.
Because you have to lose sight of the screen and look down. I will lay odds that Apple has done user research where they've noticed that some ridiculous amount of the time, 90% of the time, when somebody reaches for a function key, they look down to orient.
That seems
I would lay odds
plausible.
Because I thought, I made the same
Well, they're all the
criticism.
Same, right? Think about it.
So I made the same criticism, which was when I'm typing, because I touch type, when I'm typing, I don't look down at the keys usually. Occasionally I do for, like, if I'm typing in a weird password and I want to make sure I get it right. But generally I'm just happy to type. But when I'm hitting that top row, you know what? I look down every time. So although I think it's a decent argument, I'm not sure that it really holds water when you analyze how people actually use those keys. Because are they really touch typing F5 or are they looking down?
Yeah, I think the issue there comes for me. The whole advantage of this is as a customizable surface, you can obviously change whatever's displayed there. And you're maybe totally right in the function key context. But obviously a big part of why they're selling this is depending on the application, you can do a bunch of other things.
But the argument is if you're looking down, you're looking down anyway. I guess the counter argument is, but once you're looking down, you've kind of broken the spell controlling this.
To go beyond that and say, okay, I guess what I had, and bear in mind, my consumption of this event was very limited as I was
on a plane,
and I caught a little bit of the event, but not all of it. And so for some of the things it seemed like they were showing off, a lot of them seem to be things that were, you know, you can do with keyboard shortcuts. Sometimes they take more than one, or sometimes it's a multi-process thing. And I think for me, you know, like you said about touch, like your touch typing, and another part of it is, like, you know, if you're a pro user going into this sort of thing, is there a time saving or an advantage or an efficiency that you get from the touch bar that you don't get from the keyboard shortcuts that you've been memorizing for all these years?
And I think that's the question. And I really believe that what we saw in those demos shows that nobody really knows.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think the way that Photoshop approached the touch interface was very different than the way Final Cut Pro approached it.
Yeah.
And I suspect over the next few months or year that people are going to try a lot of stuff. And some of the stuff that Apple actually is trumpeting as the way you do this, we're going to realize, oh, that is no good. And that some other apps are going to do things in a certain way, and we're going to realize, because this always happens, we're going to realize, oh, that was really good. Maybe everything should do that. But I feel like we are at an early stage where not even Apple knows. Because, I mean, look, the origin of this seems to be clearly that Apple was looking at that F key row and saying, why do we even have this anymore?
Right.
And what could we do with that space? And what if we put a touchscreen multi-touch display there and use that as a much more dynamic function interface?
Sure.
But then they said, well, but then what? And they started to kind of invent all of these things that they could put on it, because you don't want to ship it and have it be,
a gimmick.
A gimmick. It's got two things that it does, and that's all. So they built up all of these ideas, and that's fine. But I think when it comes in contact with reality and it comes in contact with users, they're going to say, oh, like some of our ideas didn't work. Like
Apple Watch
button and all of that. But, some of the Photoshop things I looked at and I said, now that seems to make a lot more sense to me than what they're doing with Final Cut.
It's the multi-touch and gesture stuff that I think people find exciting, right? Like emulating a bunch of keys on a keyboard is not that exciting.
It's pretty dumb, right?
Right.
I mean, you can put labels on them and you can show exactly what they do.
That's where the issue comes for me, is like, is that a lot better than keyboard shortcuts? Maybe in some cases.
Maybe for people who've got like stickers on their keys in order to know how to use Final Cut, being able to have those things be in that bar,
I don't disagree
might be nice.
With that. Although, also, then you get the argument of you still can't do going back and forth with touch and stuff like that. Yep. I don't know. It's challenging.
Absolutely.
I think there are advantages for cases where you need to look at things. Like, I mean, obviously, they demoed the emoji usage. Like, that makes sense because you got a bunch of emoji. You got to pick one. And, going through the existing emoji system is fine. This might be better for some things. I don't know. There are drawbacks as well.
The argument is that if you're using a trackpad to pick an emoji from a picker that's on the screen, you never have to look down.
Right.
And so is it better to look down and touch the touch bar? And I do think over time here, we're going to realize there are certain things that are really stupid to put in the touch bar.
Sure.
And there are things that are really smart to put in the touch
bar. Yeah, I think
that we don't really know yet.
Gesture-based controls seem really interesting because there are possibilities to do things there.
I love changing your brightness and volume based on the, you tap the button and then you just slide your finger and make it brighter or dimmer. Right. That's great. That's what going beyond having a row of physical buttons gets you.
Right. There's dynamic gestures, input, that kind of thing. So I think I'm interested to see what goes there. They've obviously released a whole API for it, which is the exciting part for me, which is like third-party developers are going to go wild with this and try to do stuff. They will probably come up with things that Apple never thought of.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting. Touch ID is much more interesting to me because that has very concrete functional gains. We saw like logging into your account, right? Log into your account with it, or it's fast user switching,
and
buying things, obviously. Like, and that, especially since I believe that's also available to third parties, as it is on iOS, I think, where you can authenticate, one password. Like, it seems like there's a lot of promise there, and that's a really huge advantage that I would like to see spread across the line even more than the touch bar, because I think the security, because it's got the built-in secure enclave now.
So you think that they have the ability to do and the desire to do an external input device that's basically a keyboard with a smart bar and a touch ID
sensor?
My
only question about it was security.
Yeah.
You have to make, because if you're making a wireless connection, but if they can do that with the Apple, with the iPhone to the Mac, then presumably they can do it through a keyboard. So I don't think that's a huge difference. I guess you could walk away with the keyboard and get somebody, like, just trying to think through the security implications, because that would be my biggest question. I think there's no reason they couldn't do it. It might be a little bit more of a battery hog, but
or like I said,
they gotta put a chip in there, right? Like, that's the thing.
It's
like
T1 in,
because this is a T1 and it uses the same sort of stuff as iOS, so that seems smart to me.
All right,
the pizza guy's here.
The pizza guy's here. Yeah, we're being called in. So anything else we should talk about before we break it?
Do you want to talk about TV app really quick?
TV app is interesting. It's Apple has basically built a bunch of new APIs for app developers that let it say things like, I was just playing the show, I just finished the show, here are the shows that I have access to. And then it is able to display them all in one place and say sort of like, here's what you've been watching, and let you pick up, and it will jump straight into those apps and play them from this catalog. So it'll let you sort of see what's available, and they're doing a bunch of curated stuff. And then they're also sort of saying, here's what you've been playing.
Right.
if the apps opt into it, which like Netflix apparently is not going to do.
Or they said they're evaluating.
Yeah,
so
they're not there yet.
They may be more likely than someone like Amazon, who has already sort of made their clear that they don't want to do this.
And then that's also going to replace the videos app on iOS. It's going to replace it with a TV app.
Well, and I think so to me, and I wrote an article about this for Macworld. I'm not sure if it's up yet or not by the time this goes out. But part of this is a big key into me for their original content, since it seems pretty logical that's where they will start at least promoting it heavily
Apple
in there.
Stuff in there, right?
Because that gives them a launchpad that they didn't really have before, because they had music, but they didn't have video to go with that. So I think that's a big part of the equation. I'm interested to see the implementation of it, because I think that could be cool, but it also could end up being kind of garbagey depending on how it works. That's tough. Netflix has a good recommendation engine, but even they have issues with it.
Yeah, there's no recommendations happening in this. It's curation, like it's editors pick stuff.
Right.
And it's based on what services you subscribe to and what you've been watching.
Yeah.
And then there's a favorites interface that lets you pick favorites. So theoretically, if Netflix got on board, if you add something to your Netflix list, it would also show up in the favorites
list. Is a series show up in favorites? So like if I favorite, I watch Arrow every week.
I don't know.
Yeah, this is what I want to find out, because this is what I'm looking for, is a service where I can write down, okay, I watch this show, and this show.
Yeah.
Alert me when there's new episodes. I can go to one app, and I can go into – that's what I want.
Right.
I don't know if that's what this is or not.
The idea is this is a catalog of metadata from all your video. If the future of TV is apps, all your videos in all these different apps, what you want – is to have a place that unifies all that data.
Right.
So you can just pick your shows, and it doesn't matter if it's in the Hulu app or the CW app. It's just you just want to watch
the shows. We should add that part of this is predicated or connected at least to single sign-on, which seems tricky, because obviously single sign-on authenticates to many services, but not every service. Hulu, for example, doesn't necessarily use single sign-on. Like,
but I don't think you need that. I think Hulu just will
advertises
work with it.
It's what
if you've
it's got
the Hulu app running,
then
it will know that you've got Hulu.
Yeah. So I think it's potentially interesting. I believe that ships in December, which is a little ways off still. But it seems potentially interesting. But I really think the devil's in the details on that one.
That's exactly it. Who's getting on board with it, and how much work is it to build those things in? Because they will have to update their apps to support it.
Right, and it looks like that also in line with the sort of promoted content thing that takes top left spot on the new interface, which says to me like that's the equivalent of like, well, we didn't necessarily win the input one war, but you go to Apple TV, that's the first thing you're gonna see.
And if you press the TV button on the remote, that's where you go.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's potentially interesting, but we'll have to reconvene when that actually ships.
Yeah. Probably not in person though.
Indeed.
I'm off to Ireland and you're off to India. It's a country starting with I.
Yeah. There's no I in teams going to countries. One eye. That's true.
Yeah. There's one eye in six colors.
There is one eye in six colors. And it's watching you.
Yeah. Oh, no. That's terrifying. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for subscribing and listening to the Six Colors Secret Podcast. We'll be back in some form or other sometime soon.
Indeed.
But maybe a little bit longer than you'd expect. I don't know. It's a mystery.
It is. But never fear. We will return.
Yes, we will. We shall. All right. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.